harbor rocked wildly with the waves lapping over the broad quay and onto the cobblestones. Palms thrashed and hissed, and not even gulls stirred. His magic remained dormant, rumbling when he'd stiffen at a loud noise from within the taverns, inns, homes, and shops they passed. At his side, Rowan plowed through the storm, the rain and wind seeming to part for him. They reached the quay, Rolf's massive prize ship looming out in the heaving waters, sails tied down against the storm. At least Rolf was here. At least that had gone right. Dorian was so busy observing the ship that he nearly slammed into Rowan's back as the warrior prince halted. He staggered back, Rowan mercifully not commenting on it, then scanned the building that had snagged the prince's attention. His magic perked up like a startled deer.
"I shouldn't even be surprised," Rowan grumbled,
and the blue-painted sign clattered in the winds above the tavern entrance. The Sea Dragon. Two guards stood halfway down the block. Guards not for any uniform, but for the fact that they were standing in this storm, hands on their swords. Rowan angled his head, in a way that told Dorian the prince was likely contemplating whether it was worth it to chuck the men into the roiling harbor. But no one stopped them, as Rowan gave Dorian a warning look and opened the door to the pirate lord's personal tavern. Golden light, spices, polished wood floors and walls greeted them. It was empty, despite the storm. Utterly empty, save for the dozen or so tables. Rowan shut the door behind Dorian, scanning the room, the small stairs in the back. From where they stood, Dorian could see the letters covering most of the tables. Storm Chaser, Lady Anne, Tiger Star, the sterns of ships. Every table was made from them. They hadn't been taken from wrecks. No, this was a trophy room. A reminder to those who met with the pirate lord of how exactly he had gained his crown. All the tables seemed centered around one in the back, bigger and more worn than the others. Thresher. The enormous slats were flecked with burn marks and gouges, but the lettering remained clear, as if Rolf never wanted to forget what ship was used as his personal dining table. But as for the man himself and that power they'd felt, no sign of either. A door behind the bar opened, and a slim, brown-haired young woman stepped out. Her apron marked her as the barmaid, but her shoulders were back, head high, gray eyes sharp and clear as she scanned them and remained unimpressed.
"He was wondering when you two would come snooping," she said,
her accent rich and thick, like Adian's. Rowan said,
"Oh?"
The barmaid jerked her delicate chin toward the narrow wood stairs in the back.
"Captain wants to see you, in his office. One flight up, second door down."
"Why?"
Even Dorian knew not to ignore that tone. But the girl just grabbed a glass, held it to the candlelight to inspect for smudges, and pulled a rag from her apron. Twin tattoos of roaring gray sea dragons snaked around her tan forearms, the beast seeming to slither as her muscles shifted with the movement. Their scales, he realized, matched her eyes perfectly as she flicked her stare over Dorian and Rowan once more and said coolly,
"Don't keep him waiting."
Dorian murmured to Rowan as they ascended the creaky, dim stairs.
"It could be a trap."
"Possibly," Rowan said with equal quiet. "But consider that we were allowed to come to him. If it was a trap, the smarter move would have been to catch us unawares."
Dorian nodded, something in his chest easing.
"And you... your magic is... better?"
That hard face yielded nothing.
"I'll manage."
Not an answer. Along the second-level hallway, four steely-eyed young men had been stationed, each armed with fine swords whose hilts were fashioned after attacking sea dragons, surely the mark of their captain. None bothered to speak, as he and Rowan made for the indicated door. The Fey Prince knocked once. A grunt was all they got in response. Dorian didn't know what he expected from the Lord of Pirates. But a dark-haired man, a day past 30 if that, lounging on a red velvet chaise before the rain-splattered curve of windows, was not it. Chapter 21 The pirate lord of Skull's Bay did not turn from where he was sprawled on the chaise, piles of papers littering the worn cobalt rug beneath it. From the neat columns that Dorian could barely make out from where he and Rowan stood, a few feet into the man's office, the papers seemed crammed with tallies of goods or expenses, ill-gained or otherwise. But Rolf continued monitoring the ships tilting and bobbing in the harbor, the shadow of shipbreaker's sagging chain cleaving the storm-tossed world beyond them. Rolf had likely learned of their arrival not due to any magic map, but from sitting here. Indeed, dark leather gloves adorned his hands, the material scarred and cracked with age. Not a hint of the legendary tattoos lurking beneath. Rowan didn't move, barely blinked as he took in the captain, the office. Dorian himself had been part of enough political maneuverings to know the uses of silence, the power in who spoke first, the power in making someone wait. The rain drumming on the windows and the muffled dripping of their own soaked clothes on the threadbare carpet filled the quiet. Captain Rolf tapped a gloved finger on the arm of the chaise, watching the harbor for a heartbeat longer, as if to make sure the sea dragon still floated, and finally turned to them. "Take off your hoods. I want to know who I'm talking to." Dorian stiffened at the command, but Rowan said, "Your barmaid implied that you know damn well who we are." A wry half-smile tugged on Rolf's lips, the upper left corner flecked with a small scar, hopefully not from Aelin. "My barmaid talks too much."
"Then why keep her?"
"Easy on the eyes. Hard to come by around here," Rolf said, uncoiling to his feet. He was about Dorian's height and clothed in simple but well-made black. An elegant rapier hung at his side, along with a matching parrying knife. Rowan snorted, but to Dorian's surprise, removed his hood. Rolf's sea-green eyes flared, no doubt at the silver hair, pointed ears, and slightly elongated canines. Or the tattoo. "A man who likes ink as much as I do," Rolf said with an appreciative nod. "I think you and I will get along just fine, Prince."
"Male," Rowan corrected. "Fey males are not human men."
"Semantics," Rolf said, flicking his attention to Dorian. "So you're the king everyone's in such a tizzy over." Dorian finally tugged back his hood.
"What of it?"
With that gloved hand, Rolf pointed toward a paper-covered desk and two upholstered chairs before it. Like the man himself, it was elegant but worn, either from age, use, or battles past. And those gloves, to cover the maps inked there. Rowan gave Dorian a nod to sit. The flames on the candles burning throughout guttered as they passed, and claimed their seats. Rolf edged around the stacks of papers on the floor, and took up his spot at the desk. His carved high-backed chair might very well have been a throne from some distant kingdom.
"You seem remarkably calm for a king who's just been declared a traitor to his crown, and robbed of his throne."
Dorian was glad he was in the process of sitting down. Rowan lifted a brow.
According to whom?
According to the messengers who arrived yesterday, Rolf said, leaning back in his seat and crossing his arms. Duke Parrington, or should I call him King Parrington now, issued a decree, signed by the majority of Arterland's lords and ladies, naming you, Majesty, an enemy to your kingdom, and claiming that he liberated Rifthold from your claws after you and the Queen of Terrasen slaughtered so many innocents this spring. It also claims that any ally, a nod toward Rowan, is an enemy, and that you will be crushed under his armies if you do not yield. Silence filled his head. Rolf went on, perhaps a bit more gently. Your brother has been named Parrington's heir and crown prince. Oh, gods. Hollin was a child, but still, something had rotted in him, festered. He had left them there. Rather than deal with his mother and brother, he'd told them to stay in those mountains, where they were now as good as lambs surrounded by a pack of wolves. He wished Kaol were with him, wished for time to just stop, so he might sort out all these fractured pieces of himself, put them into some kind of order, if not back together entirely. Rolf said,
"From the look on your face, I'm guessing your arrival indeed has something to do with the fact that Rifthold now lies in ruin, its people fleeing wherever they can."
Dorian shoved out the insidious thoughts and drawled,
"I came to learn what side of the line you stand on, Captain, in regard to this conflict."
Rolf sat forward, resting his forearms on the desk.
"You must be desperate indeed, then."
A glance at Rowan.
"And is your queen equally desperate for my aid?"
"My queen," Rowan said, "is not a part of this discussion."
Rolf only grinned at Dorian.
"You wish to know what side of the line I stand on. I stand on the side that keeps the hell out of my territory."
"Rumor has it," Rowan countered smoothly, "that the easternmost part of this archipelago is no longer your territory at all."
Rolf held Rowan's gaze. A heartbeat passed, then another. A muscle flickered in Rolf's jaw. Then he pulled off those gloves to reveal hands tattooed from fingertip to wrist. He turned them palm up, revealing a map of the archipelago. And what? Dorian and Rowan leaned forward, as the blue waters did indeed flow, little dots among it sailing by. And in the easternmost tip of the archipelago, curving out to sea, those waters were gray, the islands a ruddy brown. But nothing moved. No dots indicated ships, as if the map had frozen.
"They have magic that shields them, even from this," Rolf said. "I can't get a count of their ships, or men, or beasts. Scouts never return. This winter, we'd hear roaring from the islands. Some almost human, some definitely not. Often we'd spy things standing out on those rocks. Men, but not. We let it go unchecked for too long, and paid the price."
"Beasts," Dorian said. "What sort of beasts?"
A grim smile, scar stretching.
"Ones to make you consider fleeing this continent, Majesty."
The condescension snapped something loose in Dorian's temper.
"I have walked through more nightmares than you realize, Captain."
Rolf snorted, but his eyes went to that pale line across Dorian's throat. Rowan leaned back in his chair with lazy grace, the war commander incarnate.
It must be a solid truce you hold, then, if you're still camped here with minimal ships in your harbor.
Rolf simply tugged on his worn gloves.
My fleet does have to do a little pirating every now and then, you know. Bills to pay and all that.
I'm sure, especially when you employ 4 guards to watch your hallway.
Dorian caught Rowan's train of thought and said to the Fey Prince,
I didn't send the Vog in town.
No, whatever that power had been, it had flickered into nothing now.
That's because, Rolf drawled, cutting them off, we killed most of them.
Wind rattled the windows, smearing the rain across the hall.
And as for the 4 men in the hall, they are all that's left of my crew, thanks to the battle we had early this spring, to reclaim this island after Parrington's general stole it from us.
Dorian swore low and viciously. The captain nodded.
But I am again Pirate Lord of Skull's Bay, and if the Eastern Islands are as far as Morath plans to go, then Parrington and his beasts can have them. The Dead End is barely more than caves and rock, anyway.
What manner of beasts?
Dorian said again. Rolf's pale green eyes darkened.
Sea wyverns.
Witches rule the skies with their wyverns, but these waters are now ruled by beasts bred for naval battle. Foul corruptions of an ancient template.
Imagine a creature, half the size of a first-rate ship, faster than a racing dolphin, and the damage it can cause with tooth and claw and a poisoned tail big as a mast. Worse, if you kill one of their vicious offspring, the adults will hunt you to the ends of the earth.
Rolf shrugged.
So you will find, Majesty, that I have no interest in disturbing the Eastern Islands if they do not disturb me any further. I have no interest in doing anything but continuing to profit from my endeavors.
He waved a vague hand to the papers scattered throughout. Dorian held his tongue. The offer he'd been planning to make. His coffers belonged to Morath now. He doubted privateers would volunteer based on credit. Rowan gave him a look that said the same.
Another route to win Rolf to their cause, then.
Dorian surveyed the office, the taste leaning toward finery, and yet so little that was not worn. The half-wrecked town around them. The 4 surviving crew. The way Rolf had looked at that band of white along his throat. Rowan opened his mouth, but Dorian said,
They weren't just killed, your crew.
Some were taken, weren't they?
Rolf's sea-green eyes went cold. Dorian pushed.
Captured, along with others, and taken into the Dead Islands. Used for information about how and where to strike you. The only way to free them when they were sent back to you, demons wearing their bodies, was to behead them. Burn them.
Rowan asked roughly,
Was it rings or collars they wore, Captain?
Rolf's throat bobbed once. After a long moment, he said,
Rings. They said they'd been set free, but they weren't the men who...
A shake of the head.
Demons,
he breathed, as if it explained something.
That's what he put in them.
So Rowan told him of the Vog, their princes, and of Erewhon, the last Vog king.
Even Rolf had the wits to look unnerved, as Rowan concluded. He has cast off the disguise as Parrington. He is only Erewhon now. King Erewhon, apparently.
Rolf's eyes again drifted to Dorian's neck, and it was an effort not to touch the scar there.
How did you survive it?
We even cut the rings off, but my men, they were gone.
Dorian shook his head.
I don't know.
No answer didn't make Rolf's men sound lesser for not having survived. Maybe he'd been infested by a Volg prince who'd savored taking his time. Rolf shifted a piece of paper on his desk, reading it again for a heartbeat, as if it were a mere distraction while he thought. He said at last,
"Wiping what's left of them from the Dead Islands won't do shit against the Might of Morath."
"No," Rowan countered, "but if we hold the archipelago, we can use these islands to wage a battle from the seas while we strike from the land. We can use these islands to house fleets from other kingdoms, other continents."
Dorian added,
"My hand is currently in the southern continent, in Antica itself. He will persuade them to send a fleet."
Kaol would do nothing less for him, for Otterlin.
"None will come," Rolf said. "They didn't come 10 years ago. They certainly won't come now."
He surveyed Rowan and added with a small smirk, "Especially not with the latest news." This couldn't end well, Dorian decided, as Rowan asked flatly,
"What news?"
Rolf didn't answer, instead watching the stormy bay, or whatever out there held his interest. A rough few months for the man, Dorian realized. Someone holding on to this place through sheer arrogance and will. And all those tables below, assembled from the wreckage of conquered ships. How many enemies were circling, waiting for a shot at revenge? Rowan opened his mouth, no doubt to demand an answer, when Rolf thumped his booted foot thrice on the worn floorboards. An answering thump on the wall sounded. Silence fell. Given Rolf's hatred for the Volg, Dorian doubted Morath was about to spring shut a trap. But he slid deep into his magic as footsteps thudded down the hall. From the tight cast of Rowan's tattooed face, he knew the prince was doing the same, especially as Dorian felt his magic reach toward the Fey princes, as it had done that day with Aelin atop the glass castle. Those footsteps paused outside the office door, and again, that pulse of foreign, mighty magic rose up. Rowan's hand slid into casual distance of the hunting knife at his thigh. Dorian focused on his breathing, on hauling up lines and pieces of his magic. Ice bit into his palms as the office door opened. 2 golden-haired males appeared in the doorway. Rowan's snarl reverberated through the floorboards and along Dorian's feet as he took in the muscle, the pointed ears, the gaping mouths that revealed elongated canines. The two strangers, the source of that power. They were Fey. The one with night-dark eyes and an edged grin looked Rowan over and drawled, "I liked your hair longer." A dagger embedding itself in the wall not an inch from the male's ear was Rowan's only answer. Chapter 22 Dorian didn't see the Fey Prince throw the dagger until the blade thudded into the wooden wall, its hilt still bobbing with the impact. But the dark-eyed, bronze-skinned male, so handsome that Dorian blinked, smirked at the dagger shivering beside his head. "Was your aim that shitty when you cut your own hair?" The other male beside him, tan, tawny-eyed, with a steady sort of quiet to him, lifted his broad tattooed hands.
"Rowan, put your blades down. We're not here for you."
For there were already more weapons gripped in Rowan's hands. Dorian hadn't even heard him stand, let alone draw the sword, or the elegant hatchet in the other hand. Dorian's magic writhed in his veins as it studied the two strangers.
Here you are, it sang.
Alone with Rowan, his magic had become accustomed to the prince's staggering abyss of power. But the three of these males together, ancient and powerful and primal, they were their own maelstrom. They could wreck this city without even trying. He wondered if Rolf realized it. The pirate lord said dryly,
I take it you know each other.
The solemn golden-eyed one nodded, his pale clothes so like the ones Rowan favored. Layered, efficient fabric, fit for battlefields. A band of black tattoos encircled the male's muscled neck. Dorian's stomach lurched. From a distance, it might very well have been another sort of black collar. Rowan said tightly,
Gavriel and Fenris used to work with me.
Rolf's sea-green eyes darted among them all, assessing, weighing. Fenris, Gavriel. Dorian knew those names. Rowan had mentioned them during their journey here, two members of Rowan's cadre. Rowan explained to Dorian,
They are blood-sworn to Maeve, as I used to be.
Meaning they were here under her orders. And if Maeve had sent not one but two of her lieutenants to this continent, when Lorcan was already here. Rowan said through his teeth, but sheathed his weapons,
What is your business with Rolf?
Dorian released his magic into himself. It settled into his core like a bit of dropped ribbon. Rolf waved a hand to the two males.
They're the bearer of the news I promised you, among other things.
And we were just sitting down to lunch, Fenris said, those dark eyes dancing. Shall we? Fenris didn't wait for them as he ducked back into the hall and walked out. The tattooed one, Gavriel, sighed quietly.
It's a long tale, Rowan, and one you and the King of Adarlan,
a flick of tawny eyes in his direction,
must hear.
He gestured to the hall and said, utterly stone-faced,
You know how cranky Fenris gets when he doesn't eat.
I heard that, called a deep male voice from the hall. Dorian reined in his smile, watching Rowan for his reaction instead. But the Fey Prince only jerked his head at Gavriel in silent order to lead the way. None of them, not even Rolf, spoke, as they descended into the main room. The barmaid was gone, only sparkling glasses behind the bar hinting that she'd been there. And indeed, digging into a steaming bowl of what smelled like fish stew, Fenris now waited for them at a table in the back. Gabriel slid into a seat beside the warrior, his mostly full bowl sloshing a bit as the table shifted, and said to Rowan, when the prince halted halfway through the room,
Is...
The Fey warrior paused, as if weighing the words and how Rowan might react if the question was posed poorly. Dorian knew why the exact next moment.
Is Aelin Galathinius with you?
Dorian didn't know where to look. At the warriors now at the table, at Rowan beside him, or at Rolf, brows raised as he leaned against the stair banister, with no idea that the queen was his great enemy. Rowan shook his head once, a swift, cutting move.
My queen is not in our company.
Fenris flicked his brows up, but continued devouring his meal, his gray jacket unbuttoned to reveal the muscled brown chest peeking through the V of his white shirt. Gold embroidery swirled along the lapels of the jacket, the only sign of wealth among them. Dorian didn't quite know what had happened this past spring with Rowan's cadre, but they obviously hadn't parted on good terms, at least on Rowan's end. Gavriel rose to drag over two chairs,
Closest to the exit, Dorian noticed. Perhaps Gabriel was the one who kept the peace among the cadre. Rowan didn't make a move for them. It was so easy to forget that the prince had centuries of handling foreign courts, had gone to war and back again, with these males. Rowan didn't bother with diplomacy, however, as he said,
"Tell me whatever the hell this news is."
Fenris and Gabriel exchanged a look. The former just rolled his eyes and gestured with his spoon for Gabriel to speak.
"Maeve's armada sails for this continent."
Dorian was glad he didn't have anything in his stomach. Rowan's words were guttural as he asked,
"Is that bitch allying with Morath?"
He cut what Dorian considered to be the definition of an icy stare at Rolf.
"Are you allying with her?"
"No,"
Gabriel said evenly. Rolf, to his credit, just shrugged.
"I told you, I want no part in this war."
"Maeve isn't the sort to share power,"
Gabriel cut in calmly.
"But before we left, she was readying her armada to leave. For Ilwe."
Dorian whooshed out a breath.
"Why Ilwe? Is it possible she could be sending aid?"
From the look on Rowan's face, Dorian could tell the prince was already cataloging and marking, analyzing what he knew of his former queen, of Ilwe, and how it tied to everything else. Dorian tried to control his thundering heart, knowing they could likely hear its shift in rhythm. Fenris set down his spoon.
"I doubt she's sending aid to anyone at all, at least not where this continent is concerned. And again, she didn't tell us her specific reasons."
"She always tells us," Rowan countered. "She's never contained information like that."
Fenris's dark eyes flickered. "That was before you humiliated her by leaving her for Aelin of the Wildfire, and before Lorkin abandoned her as well. She trusts none of us now."
"Ilwe." Maeve had to know how dear the kingdom was to Aelin. But to launch an armada, there had to be something there, something worth her while.
Dorian ran through every lesson he'd been taught, every book he'd read on the kingdom. But nothing sparked. Rowan said,
"Maeve cannot believe she can conquer Ilwe, at least not for any extended period of time. Not without drawing all her armies here and leaving her realm undefended."
But perhaps it had spread Erewhon thin, even if the cost of Maeve's invasion would be steep.
"Again," Fenris drawled, "we don't know details. We only told him,"
a jerk of the chin toward where Rolf was still leaned against the banister with crossed arms,
"as a courtesy warning, among other things."
Dorian noted that Rowan didn't ask if they'd have extended the courtesy to them had they not been here, or what exactly those other things were. The prince said to Rolf,
"I need to dispatch messages. Immediately."
Rolf studied his gloved hands.
"Why bother? Won't the recipient arrive soon enough?"
"What?"
Dorian braced himself at the simmering temper in Rowan's tone. Rolf smiled.
"Rumor has it, Aelin Galathinius destroyed General Narok and his lieutenants over in Wendlin, and that she accomplished this with a fey prince at her side. Impressive."
Rowan's canines flashed.
"And your point is, Captain?"
"I just wish to know whether Her Majesty Queen of Fire expects a grand parade when she arrives."
Dorian doubted Rolf would very much like her other title, Otterlin's Assassin. Rowan's snarl was soft.
"Again, she's not coming here."
"Oh, You mean to tell me that her lover goes to rescue the King of Otterlin, and instead of taking him north, he brings him here? And it doesn't somehow mean I'm to soon play host to her. At the mention of a lover, Rowan gave Fenris a lethal stare. The beautiful male, really, there was no way to describe him other than that, just shrugged. But Rowan said to Rolf, "She asked me to bring King Dorian to persuade you to join our cause. But as you have no interest in any agenda but your own, it seems our trip was wasted. So we have no further use for you at this table, especially if you are incapable of dispatching messengers." Rowan flicked his eyes toward the stairs behind Rolf. "You're dismissed." Fenris choked on a dark laugh, but Gavriel straightened as Rolf hissed, "I don't care who you are and what power you wield. You don't give me orders in my territory."
"You'd better get used to taking them,"
Rowan said, his voice calm in that way that made Dorian's every instinct prepare to run.
"For if Morath wins this war, they will not be content to let you flounce about these islands pretending to be king. They will lock you out of every port and river, deny you trade with cities that you have come to depend on. Who shall your buyers be when there are none left to purchase your goods? I doubt Maeve will bother or remember you."
Rolf snapped, "If these islands are sacked, we will sail to others and others. The seas are my haven. Upon the waves, we will always be free."
"I'd hardly call squatting in your tavern in fear of Volg assassins free."
Rolf's gloved hands flexed and unfurled, and Dorian wondered if he'd go for the rapier at his side. But then the pirate lord said to Fenris and Gavriel,
"We will meet here tomorrow at 11.
When his gaze shifted to Rowan, it hardened. "Send however many damn messages you want. You may stay until your queen arrives, which I have no doubt she will. At that time, I will hear what the legendary Aelin Galathinius has to say for herself. Until then, get the hell out." He jerked his chin toward Gavriel and Fenris. "You can talk to the princes at their own damn lodgings." Rolf stalked to the front door, yanking it open to reveal a wall of rain, and the four young but hard-looking men lingering on the soaked quay. Their hands shot to their weapons, but Rolf made no move to summon them. He only pointed out the door. Rowan stared down the man for a moment, then said to his former companions,
"Let's go."
They weren't stupid enough to argue. This was bad. Undeniably bad. Rowan's magic frayed apart as he worked to keep the shields around him and Dorian intact. But he didn't let Fenris or Gavriel get a whiff of that exhaustion, didn't reveal one bit of the effort it took to hold the magic and concentrate. Rolf might very well be a lost cause against Erewhon or Maeve, especially once he saw Aelin. If Aelin had been present during this conversation, Rowan had a feeling it would have ended with the sea dragon, both the inn and the ship anchored in the harbor, aflame. But those sea wyverns, and Maeve's armada. He'd think about that later, but shit. Just shit. The no-nonsense innkeeper at the Ocean Rose asked no questions as Rowan purchased two rooms, the best the inn had to offer. Not when he laid a gold piece on the counter. 2 weeks' accommodations, plus all meals, plus stabling of their horses if they had them, and unlimited laundry, she'd offered with a knowing look at his clothes. And whatever guests he wished, she added as Rowan whistled sharply. And Dorian, Fenris, and Gavriel crossed the flagstone courtyard, hoods on as they edged around the burbling fountain. Rain pattered on the potted palms,
rustling the magenta bougainvillea crawling up the walls toward the white-painted balconies, still shuttered against the storm. Rowan asked the woman to send up what was likely enough food for 8 people, then stalked for the polished stairs at the back of the dim dining room, the others falling in behind him. Fenris, mercifully, kept his mouth shut until they reached Rowan's room, discarded their cloaks, and Rowan lit a few candles. The act alone left a hole in his chest. Fenris sank into one of the cushioned chairs before the dark fireplace, running a finger down the black-painted arm. Such fine accommodations. Which of the royals is paying, then? Dorian, who had been about to claim the seat by the small desk before the shuttered windows, stiffened. Gavriel gave Fenris a look that said, "Please, no brawling."
"Does it make a difference?"
Rowan asked, as he went wall to wall, lifting the framed pictures of lush flora for any spy holes or access points. Then he checked beneath the white-sheeted bed, its posts of twirled black wood kissed with the candlelight, trying not to consider that for all his resolutions, she'd share this room with him, this bed. The space was secure, serene, even, with the beat of the rain in the courtyard and on the roof, the smell of sweet fruit heavy in the air.
"Someone's gotta have money to finance this war," Fenris purred,
watching Rowan at last lean against a low dresser beside the door. "Though, maybe considering yesterday's decree from Morath, you'll be moving to more economical quarters."
Well, that said enough about what Fenris and Gavriel knew regarding Erewhon's decree concerning Dorian and his allies.
"Worry over your own business, Fenris," Gavriel said.
Fenris snorted, toying with a small curl of golden hair at his nape. "How you even managed to walk with that much steel on you, Whitethorn, has always been a mystery to me."
Rowan said smoothly, "How no one has ever cut out your tongue just to shut you up has always been a mystery to me as well."
An edged chuckle. "I've been told it's my best feature. At least the women think so." A low laugh escaped Dorian, the first sound like it Rowan had witnessed from the king. Rowan braced his hands on the dresser.
"How did you keep your sense hidden?"
Gabriel's tawny eyes darkened.
"A new trick of Maeve's, to keep us nearly invisible in a land that does not receive our kind warmly."
He jerked his chin at Dorian and Rowan.
"Though it seems it's not wholly effective."
Rowan said,
"You two better have a damn good explanation for why you're here, and why you dragged Rolf into whatever it is."
Fenris drawled, "You get everything you want, Rowan, yet you're still a stone-cold bastard. Lorcan would be proud."
"Where's Connell?"
was Rowan's mocking reply, naming Fenris's twin. Fenris's face tightened.
"Where do you think? One of us is always the anchor."
"She'd stop keeping him as collateral if you didn't make your discontent so obvious."
Fenris had always been a pain in his ass, and Rowan had not forgotten that it was Fenris who had wanted the task of handling Aelin Galathinius this past spring. Fenris loved anything that was wild and beautiful, and to dangle Aelin before him, Maeve had known it was torture. Perhaps it was torture, too, for Fenris to be so far from Maeve's grip, but to know that his twin was back in Doranel. That if Fenris never came back, Connell would be punished in unspeakable ways. It was how the Queen had ensnared them in the first place. Offspring were rare among the Fae, but twins? Even rarer. And for twins to be born gifted with strength, to grow into males whose dominance rivaled that of warriors centuries older than them. Maeve had coveted them. Fenris had refused the offer to join her service. So she'd gone after Connell, The dark to Fenris's gold. Quiet to Fenris's roar. Thoughtful to Fenris's recklessness. Fenris got what he wanted. Women, glory, wealth. Connell, though skilled, was forever in his twin's shadow. So when the queen approached him about the blood oath, at a time when Fenris, not Connell, had been selected to fight in the war with the Acadians, Connell had sworn it. And when Fenris returned to find his brother bound to the queen, and learned what Maeve forced him to do behind closed doors, Fenris had bargained. He'd swear the oath, but only to get Maeve to back off his brother. For over a century now, Fenris had served in the queen's bedroom, had sat chained by invisible shackles beside her dark throne. Rowan might have liked the male, respected him, if it weren't for that damned mouth of his. "So," Fenris said, well aware he had not answered Rowan's demand for information, "are we soon to call you King, Rowan?" Gavriel murmured, "Gods above, Fenris." He gave the sigh of the long-suffering, and added before Fenris could open that stupid mouth,
"Your arrival, Rowan, was a fortunate turn of events."
Rowan faced the male beside him, second in command for Maeve now that Rowan had vacated the title. As if the golden-haired warrior read the name from his eyes, Gavriel asked,
"Where is Lorcan?"
Rowan had been debating how to answer that question from the moment he'd seen them. That Gavriel had asked. Why had they come to Skull's Bay?
"I don't know where Lorcan is," Rowan said.
Not a lie. If they were lucky, his former commander would get the other two word keys, realize Aelin had tricked him, and come running, delivering the two keys for Aelin to then destroy. If they were lucky. Gavriel said,
"You don't know where he is, but you've seen him."
Rowan nodded. Fenris snorted, "Are we really going to play truths and lies? Just tell us, you bastard." Rowan pinned Fenris with a look. The White Wolf of Dorinel smiled right back at him. Gods help them all if Fenris and Adian ever sat in a room together. Rowan said,
"Are you here on Maeve's command, ahead of the Armada?"
Gavriel shook his head.
"Our presence has nothing to do with the Armada sailing. She sent us to hunt him. You already know the crime he committed."
An act of love. Though only in the twisted way that Lorcan could love things. Only in the twisted way he loved Maeve.
"He claims to be doing it in her best interest," Rowan said casually,
aware of the king seated beside him. Rowan knew most underestimated the sharp intelligence under that disarming smile. Knew that Dorian's value wasn't his godlike magic, but his mind. He'd latched onto Rolf's fear and trauma at the hands of the Vog, and laid the foundation, one he'd make sure Aelin would exploit. "Lorcan's always been arrogant that way," Fenris drawled. "This time, he crossed the line."
"So you've been sent here to bring Lorcan back?"
Those tattoos on Gavriel's throat, marks Rowan himself had inked, bobbed with each word, as he said,
"We've been sent here to kill him."
Chapter 23. Holy gods. Rowan froze.
"That explains the two of you, then."
Fenris tossed his hair out of his dark eyes. "Three, actually. Vaughn left yesterday afternoon to fly north, while we take the south." Vaughn, with his osprey form, could cover the far harsher terrain more easily. "We landed in this shithole town to see if Rolf had dealings with Lorcan,
to bribe him to tip us off if Lorkin should come through here again, looking to hire a boat. Skull's Bay would be one of the few ports where Lorkin could do such a thing without questions. Warning Rolf about Maeve's armada was part of convincing the bastard to help us. We're to make our way onto the continent from here, start our hunt in the south, and since these lands are rather large, a flash of white teeth and a feral smile, any inkling about his general whereabouts would be much appreciated. Prince. Rowan debated it. But if they caught Lorkin, and the commander had possession of even one of the word keys, if they brought both commander and keys back to Maeve, especially if she was already sailing for Eelway for whatever reasons of her own. Rowan shrugged.
I washed my hands of you all this spring. Lorkin's business is his own.
You prick, Fenris snarled. Gabriel cut in.
If we could bargain?
There was something like pain and regret in Gabriel's eyes. Of all of them, Gabriel had probably been his only friend. Rowan debated if he should tell him about the son who was now making his way here. Debated if Adian would like the chance to meet his father. Perhaps before war made corpses of them all. But Rowan said,
Has Maeve given you leave to bargain on her behalf?
We only received our orders, Fenris drawled, and the permission to use any means necessary to kill Lorkin. She did not mention your queen at all, so that amounts to a yes. Rowan crossed his arms.
You send me an army of Dorinel warriors, and I'll tell you where Lorkin is, and where he plans to go.
Fenris let out a harsh laugh.
Mother's tits, Rowan. Even if we could, the armada's already in use. I suppose I'll have to make do with you two, then.
Dorian had the good sense not to look as surprised as Rowan's former brothers-in-arms. Fenris burst out laughing.
What? Work for your queen? Fight in your battles?
Isn't that what you want, Fenris?
Rowan fixed him with a stare.
To serve my queen? You've been pulling on the leash for months. Well, here's your shot.
All amusement faded from Fenris's beautiful face.
You're a bastard, Rowan.
Rowan turned to Gabriel.
I'm assuming Maeve didn't specify when you had to do this.
A shallow nod was his only confirmation.
And you will technically be fulfilling her command to you.
The blood oath operated on specific, clear demands, and relied on close physical contact to enable that tug to get the body to yield. This far away, they had to obey Maeve's orders, but could use any loopholes in the language to their own advantage.
Lorkin might very well be gone by the time you've considered our bargain fulfilled, Fenris countered.
Rowan smiled a bit.
Ah, but the thing is, Lorkin's path will eventually lead him right back to me, to my queen. Who knows how long it will take, but he will find us again, at which time he'll be yours.
He tapped a finger against his bicep.
People are going to be talking about this war for 1,000 years. Longer.
Rowan jerked his chin at Fenris.
You've never shied from a fight.
That's if we survive, Fenris said. And what of Brannan's gifts? How long will a single flame last against the darkness that gathers?
Maeve hid her motives about the Armada and Eelway, but she at least told us who really reigns in Morath.
When Rowan had walked through the door of the Sea Dragon, he'd wondered what god had sent the storm that had pushed them to arrive in Skull's Bay on this day, at this time. Together, he and the cadre had taken on a legion of Otterland's forces this spring, and won, easily. And even if Lorkin, Vaughn, and Connell weren't with them, one Fey warrior was as good as 100 mortal soldiers, maybe more.
Terrasen needed more troops.
Well, here was a 3-mail army.
And against the aerial Iron Teeth legions, they would need Fey speed and strength and centuries of experience. Together, they had sacked cities and kingdoms for Maeve. Together, they had waged war and ended it. Rowan said,
10 years ago, we did nothing to stop this.
If Maeve had sent a force, we might have kept it from growing so out of control. Our brethren were hunted and killed and tortured. Maeve let it happen for spite, because Aelin's mother would not yield to her wishes. So yes, my fire heart is one flame in the Sea of Darkness. But she is willing to fight, Fenris. She is willing to take on Erewhon, take on Maeve and the gods themselves if it means peace can be had.
Across the room, Dorian's eyes had shuddered. Rowan knew the king would fight and go down swinging, and that his gift could make a difference between victory and defeat. Yet, he was untrained, still untried despite all he'd endured.
But Aelin is one person,
Rowan went on,
and even her gifts might not be enough to win.
Alone,
he breathed, meeting Fenris's stare, then Gavriel's.
She will die. And once that flame goes out, it is done. There is no second chance. Once that fire extinguishes, we are all doomed in every land and every world.
The words were poison on his tongue, his very bones aching at the thought of that death. What he'd do if it should happen. Gavriel and Fenris looked at each other, speaking in that silent way he used to do with them. There was one card Rowan had to play to convince them. To convince Gavriel. Even if the specificity of Maeve's command might allow it, she could very well punish them for acting around her orders. She'd done it before. They all bore scars from it. They knew the risk of it as well as Rowan did. Gavriel shook his head slightly at Fenris. Before they could turn to say no, Rowan said to Gavriel,
"If you do not fight in this war, Gavriel, then you doom your son to die."
Gavriel froze. Fenris spat, "Bullshit." Even Dorian was gaping a bit. Rowan wondered just how pissed Adian would be as he said,
"Think on my proposal. But know that your son makes for Skull's Bay. You may want to wait to decide until you meet him."
"Who?" Rowan wasn't sure Gavriel was breathing properly. The warrior's hands were clenched so tightly, the scars over his knuckles were moon white.
"I have a son."
Some part of Rowan felt like the prick Fenris claimed he was, and not the male that Aelin believed him to be, as he nodded. The information would have gotten out sooner or later. If Maeve had learned first, she might have schemed to ensnare Adian, might have sent the cadre to kill or steal him. But now, Rowan supposed, he'd ensnared the cadre himself. It was only a matter of how desperately Gavriel wanted to meet his son, and how afraid they were of failing Maeve, should they not find Lorcan. So Rowan said coldly,
"Stay out of our way until they arrive, and we'll stay out of yours."
Putting his back to them went against every instinct, but Rowan kept his shields tight, his magic spread to alert him. If either so much as breathed wrong while he twisted to open the bedroom door in silent dismissal. He had much to do, starting with writing a warning to the Eelway royals and Terrasen's forces, ending with trying to figure out how the hell they could fight two wars at once. Gabriel rose, slack-faced, pale, something like devastation written there. Rowan caught the spark of realization that flashed across Dorian's eyes, a heartbeat before the king buried it.